This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, Tales from the Trail, Howard Wilkinson on the lighter side of politics. First up, on August 26, 1987, a red Camaro rolled off the assembly line at the General Motors plant in Norwood. It was the last car produced at the GM factory, which opened in 1923. During its 64 years, the plant assembled more than 8 million cars, including Camaros, Novas, Impalas, and Pontiac Firebirds.
The day that Herb Stone made the announcement of which plant they were going to close down, either Norwood or Van Nuys, he made an announcement from where they backed the rail cars into the plant. And I asked everybody I worked around, you know, if they were going to go down to the meeting to hear what Herb Stone had to say. And nobody went down with me. You know, they sitting there at the picnic tables and talking and playing cards and stuff. And so I went down to the area where Herb was going to make the announcement. Climbed up on this big metal box that parts had come in and stood up there and said that management had made a decision on which plant they were going to close, Norwood or Van Nuys. And the way that I was standing, I could see the side of his face. His voice started cracking. And a tear ran down his cheek. And he said, management's made a decision to close Norwood now. And once I seen that tear run down his cheek, I knew that my career with GM was coming to a screeching halt. Went back up to my work area. Everybody's still up there visiting and playing cards. And one of my friends yelled out at me, said, what the old man have to say? I said, the old man says it. You ain't got a job no more.
GM was the biggest employer in Norwood, and the plant shutdown cost more than 4,000 jobs, severely damaging the city's economy. A local company is producing a documentary about the GM Norwood plant, and joining us to discuss the film project, the historic significance of the General Motors facility, and how the city of Norwood has rebuilt since the plant's closing, are co-owner and creative director of 779 and producer of Norwood, Where Legends Were Born, Drew Money, producer Alex Money, Patrick Longo, director of HCDC, formerly the Hamilton County Development Company, and Don Johnson, who installed the final part on the last car that came off the assembly line at the GM Norwood plant in 1987. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Don, Drew, Alex, and Pat, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Don, let's start with you. That was you giving us that narration about in the beginning about the announcement that the plant was closing. What was the mood among your coworkers? What was their reaction once it dawned on them what was happening?
Actually, a lot of people didn't think that they were going to close the Norwood plant because most of the parts came off the I-75 corridor, and they were putting a new roof on the factory. And a lot of people kind of thought that GM was, that they weren't the, going to close the plant down. And I don't know, I guess a lot of those things, like the new roof on the factory, that was probably all contracted out, years prior. But a lot of people, thought that GM was bluffing somehow.
How long did it take before they realized they weren't bluffing?
I think some of the people thought that GM was bluffing up until the last day. I was living in VV, Indiana at the time, and I would drive up on Saturdays. They would have, you know, like Save the Plant rallies and stuff, and there might only be a couple hundred people show up. And most of those weren't even UAW people. A lot of those people were like Steelworkers Union. And at the same time, you know, we might have 200 people show up on a Save the Plant rally. And in Van Nuys, Reverend Jesse Jackson, you know, he had hundreds of people marching in the streets, you know, of Van Nuys, and warning GM if they closed down Van Nuys that they would never sell another, you know, Chevrolet or Pontiac in California. And at the same time, a lot of the people in Norwood thought GM was puffing. And it wasn't even close to contract time or anything. And I'll tell you, when I seen Herb Stone climb up on that that metal crate, you know, and that tear run down his cheek, I knew Herb Stone wasn't bluffing.
Don, for the folks who didn't think they were bluffing, who knew what was coming, how tough was that? I mean, you're told this news, the plant's going to close, and yet you still have to keep producing cars for a certain amount of time before the plant closes. How tough was it to do that? How tough was it to stay focused on your job?
Oh, it was very hard. You know, I started at GM. I was in my late 20s, 27 or 28, and I had a lot of different jobs, you know, prior to getting hired at GM. And, you know, I knew the reality, you know, that, you know, that was the best job I ever had. And I'm sure it was the best job most of those people had. Now, you had a lot of people at Norwood that had over 30 years seniority. And then you had a lot of people that didn't have, you know, enough seniority to retire. So there's you had a system like that, you know, some people, you know, they would just go into retirement. But then you had a lot of people that, I guess, just knew that they were, you know, soon to be out of a job.
So, Drew, tell us what...
It was the last two or three weeks that the plant was open. I mean, it was very hard to go into work.
Mm. I can imagine.
It was tough. There was a lot of fights that broke out on the line. You know, a lot of, it was very tough. And then, you know, when you would leave the plant or come in, you know, there'd be news media, you know, at the front door. You know, they'd all want you to stop and, you know, interview. There was a guy, you know, dressed up like the Grim Reaper, you know, and had a big sigh.
Oh, great.
Had the dates of the plant, you know, on a sign. And so, I mean, you know, it was
he out there every day, Don?
Oh, yes, sir. He was out there, you know, every day up until the last day.
Yeah.
I never ever did talk to the guy because, you know, kind of spooked me. And I was already, you know, it was difficult.
You didn't need the reminder. Drew, I want to ask you what inspired you, Drew, to produce this.
Well, you know, there's certainly, I think, a lot of heartbreak over a legacy like that coming to a close when the plant did close. But the thing that really kind of inspired us to embark on this was just the legacy of what was actually produced and all the good that came out of that plant. As a kid, I always remember, you know, riding around in my dad, who was with us here, Alex, my dad's 1969 Camaro. And, you know, that was the cool car. That was the car that all my friends thought was cool. And, you know, I got to ride in it. And as I grew up, and I think just like everyone else, you know, they kind of developed a special affinity for these cars. But especially once, you know, they had gone into successive generations and those first-gen Camaros were not available anymore, you know, the people really kind of sought them out and restored them and cared for them. And it really just grew out of my dad and I trying to find some information on the plant where that car was built. And we started digging and we found some, you know, some people who had published a little bit of work here and a little bit of work there and someone who had written a book and someone, you know, who had put an event together. And we thought, we're not the only ones interested in this. We actually ought to keep digging on this.
So, Pat, let's talk about the impact this had on Norwood when this happened. You're talking about, what, 4,000 jobs that Norwood no longer is getting any tax receipts from, and they don't have this economic activity going on in the city anymore. How big an impact did this have?
Well, let's look at it from a regional standpoint. You're talking one of the top 10 employers in all of greater Cincinnati going away and not coming back. But then that's just the direct employment. There's also, as they said, hey, the steel workers, you know, Middletown was affected by this. You know, other aspects of Cincinnati were affected by this. So you're talking about the suppliers and the local restaurants and the hair cutters and things like that, that all of a sudden, hey, I probably had flow coming through my door 6-7 days a week, kind of going away. You know, and all of a sudden we're like, what's going on as a community? You know, there was some interest, you know, as Don said, you know, to keep this, you know, there was a lot of political beings, you know, the mayor of Cincinnati wanted this to stay. The mayor of Norwood at the time wanted it to stay. It just, you know, GM looked him in the eye and said, this isn't feasible anymore. We're not moving as much product out of this line as we could. And I think they went from two lines to one line. And I think California or wherever the other plant was won.
Yeah, there's an interesting history to what really closed the plant, and it's still debated today. But, you know, circumstantial evidence in the research we've done and the materials we've studied of research that other people have done was that the Canadian government basically gave General Motors a $220 million loan to move additional production into Canada. They wanted more automotive production. And GM said, well, let's look at the plants we have, and let's see which ones we can move some production into Canada from. And Norwood had challenges. It had logistics challenges. It was a very old plant. It was a small footprint. It was a three-story plant. Most modern plants had been, at this point, already going to a single-story design. And there were really, really dicey, dynamic management labor relations throughout Norwood's whole history.
You know, yeah, didn't they have the longest industrial strike U.S. history?
Absolutely, yeah, which resulted in the destruction of 1,100 cars. And we can talk about that as well. But really what kind of did Norwood in was the fact that GM had 30 – it's interesting. That loan actually comes due this year. It was a 30-year loan, $220 million to move production up. And that came in the form of renovating factories, building some new plants, adding on to plants. GM said, well, let's move some production up. Let's close a plant here. Let's take a platform and move it all the way up there. So ultimately, the idea was we're going to shut down Van Nuys and Norwood, but we need to do this in a way that's strategic so that essentially we don't look like the bad guy. And what is sort of debated but also widely held view is that General Motors purposely closed Norwood first because their supply chain was on the East Coast. So all the parts that went into making all of these cars, Norwood was the closest plant. By closing Norwood, they had to ship parts to California, and then they had to ship the cars back. So it made it way more expensive to produce these cars. And after a few years went by, they could say, we can't survive doing this. Look at the books. Just look at the numbers. But we have a new plant, with increased capacity in Canada. Let's just move it up there because we can't survive otherwise. And by doing that in that order, they weren't really, you know, looked at as a bad guy for moving production to Canada. It made business sense. And they would have been fools not to do it. I mean, this is the global economy that we live in. You know, there's really no villains here. It's a story of globalized economy.
I think an additional factor is that when the Canadians and GM were negotiating, the Canadians were saying, okay, $220 million, what are you going to give us to produce? They wanted something that would be a big number car, and so they offered the Camaro and Firebird production as part of that. So that's really what got that helped to get Norwood and Van Nuys on the table.
And we're going to take a short break, and Alex, when we come back, I'm going to talk some more about what those cars meant to American muscle car culture. We'll continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. He's pounding down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go, and
mighty short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Arcanian, and that's from the 1977 movie Smokey and the Bandit. And there's a connection between that movie and GM Norwood.
Back in 1977, a movie came out, Smokey and the Bandit, that featured a black Trans Am with the gold eagle on it. And anyway, that movie was so popular that Norwood couldn't produce enough black Trans Ams. That's one reason I actually got offered a job, was because they had to hire more people off the street to you know, fulfill production.
I know Hal and I, Hal Needham and I, both were looking at pictures of cars, and when we saw the picture of the Trans Am, it just jumped out at us. And I said, "That's it, Hal." And he said, "Yeah, that's it." And it was. I mean, it just, you can always tell an American sports car. And they are the best, I think. And out in front of them is the Trans Am.
Joining me this afternoon, co-owner and creative director of 779 and producer of Norwood, Where Legends Were Born, Drew Money, producer Alex Money, Patrick Longo, who's director of HCDC, and Don Johnson, who installed the first part, or the final part, on the last car that rolled off the assembly line at the GM Norwood plant in 1987. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Alex, so they were producing, toward the end primarily, it was Firebirds and Camaros, correct?
That's correct. There were some other things in the mix along the way, but that was primarily the production.
What did those cars mean to American culture and to muscle cars?
They mean a lot. I think over the years it's grown, even from the time they were first produced. Let me just drop back a little bit into history. When the Camaro was being named, and that was actually the first of the two that came out of that plant, there were lots of names on the table: Panther, Commodore. Nobody had ever heard Camaro until nearly the end, and then the Chevy general manager, Pete Estes, made an announcement one day on radio to a number of stations across the country, and the announcement was, "It's the Camaro." Nobody knew what a Camaro was, but it was derived from a couple of French words, I believe, that meant companion, comrade, buddy. And the General Motors management said, We're naming it this because this is the kind of relationship we expect to form between the car owners and their cars. And that's exactly what eventually formed between me and my car, which has led Drew and me and some others on this journey. So the car meant a great deal, not only to the people who bought them, but also the people who produced them. And we've learned that as we've talked to a lot of the retirees who actually built those cars on that line. Movies like Smokey and the Bandit didn't hurt. Firebird production, or Trans Am production, I should say, specifically, increased by 70% after that movie came out. That movie was the second grossing movie at the time, next to Star Wars, and they came out the same year. So there was a lot of impetus behind those cars at that time, and they persist today. Those cars, Camaros and Trans Ams, are increasing in value every single day, particularly the ones of that era in the first, second, third generations. And most of those were built here in Norwood.
And Don, you ended up with a job thanks to that black Trans Am.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I was actually told the guy that hired me in at the end that that's the reason that they had to hire more people, you know, was because couldn't keep up with production due to Smokey and the Bandit.
And it's phenomenal, the amount of following, as Alex mentioned, that those cars still have and that grows every year. As part of this documentary, you know, it's been a journey from when we first started just trying to find out some information on the plant, you know, to go and meet people and see the crowds of people that still turn out just to see glimpses of these special cars. And just a few weeks ago, Alex and I went on this thing called the Bandit Run, which is, it's hosted by a company called Restore Muscle Car. They put it on every year. I think this is coming up on maybe their 10th anniversary of doing it. But this was the 40th anniversary of Smokey and the Bandit. So there was a big Smokey and the Bandit festival in Jonesboro, Georgia, where the film was shot. So these guys who do this Bandit Run, they basically drive a route like in Smokey and the Bandit every year. And every year they change the route around the country. Well, this year being the 40th anniversary, they wanted to do that original route from Texarkana to Atlanta. So we took my 79 Trans Am down there and met up with them in Tupelo, Mississippi, and followed it the rest of the way to the run. And we had met some people last year. The run actually came through Cincinnati last year, and I met someone from the Burt Reynolds Institute who was on the run. And I found out that he was going to be there this year, and he's a big supporter of, you know, what these cars mean, because it's his legacy as well. You know, he helped drive the sales of the car. The car helped increase his popularity. But we had an opportunity to interview him, which you heard in that last clip, and he is just the most, you know, gracious person. And I think he still has a love affair with these cars that Norwood produced right here in our backyard.
Drew, how many people did you and Alex interview for this documentary?
We have interviewed over 25 former employees of the plant. We have met some really special people along the way. We have built a great relationship with Corey and Logan Lawson, who are the owners of the serial number one Camaro, which is a really special car. That was the first hand-built pilot car in Norwood, built right there in Norwood. And one of the things that makes that notable is that Norwood was actually the first plant where GM actually shipped the pilot cars to the plant to assemble on site. And there are a lot of firsts with Norwood. They were always kind of out front on the cutting edge of production and innovation. But we've gotten to know him. We've gotten to know a gentleman by the name of Phil Boris, who wrote an outstanding book researching the history of the plant. And numerous other people. You know, Mr. Reynolds was a fantastic interview, and we've got a few more we're targeting. We're going to try and go after a few more folks of, you know, some notoriety that might be able to contribute. But I would say at this point, we've probably interviewed 40 to 50 people.
Let me add something that doesn't just jump out at you unless you stop and think about it. These cars were built between 30 and 50 years ago in the Norwood plant, the cars we're talking about. So the people who built those cars are getting up on years like I am. So they're more my age. I was expecting, I guess, in the back of my mind to walk in a room and see some young guy in his 30s who built my car. And that's not the way it happened. So these people are like a lot of the World War II veterans. You know, they're getting hard to find. The guys who actually lived it and have the stories, like Don does. I want to, by the way, I'll say happy birthday to Don Johnson because his birthday was yesterday.
Happy birthday, Don.
Happy birthday, Don.
I don't know if he wants us to tell his age, but that's okay.
66.
Way to go, Don. And so we're all getting up in years, and we're not going to be around forever. So you got to capture these stories while they're still there, people who lived it.
I wanted to ask Don, what was the final part you put on that red Camaro?
Oh, boy. My foreman, Larry Bridges, I was an ARO, absentee relief operator. And people were actually walking off their jobs, you know, just breaking down and crying, men and women. And every time I'd get out of the last car that I put a part on, my foreman, Larry Bridges, he'd encourage me to keep going further up the line. And, you know, I was trying to put parts on that I never put on before because I worked up on high two, you know, cockpit, hard trim, and ended up downstairs on the main line. And the last thing I remember Larry wanting me to do was stick cardboard in this door glass because I didn't know how to put the window regulator in. I had never done it before. But he kept encouraging me. He said that this last car needs to look good. It needs to start because, you know, the president of GM, you know, Roger Smith, was going to get in it and drive it off of the end of the line. So the last thing I remember actually doing was sticking pieces of cardboard down in this piece of window glass so the window wouldn't just
know, fall straight down to the bottom of the door. So I actually didn't put the last part on the last car because the last thing I put in was the piece of cardboard. But I remember when I got out of the car, and there was, you know, probably 100 people, a lot of people with cameras and things, and everybody, you know, was clapping and woo-hooing and acting like they were, you know, really happy. And I got out of that car, and, you know, I had a pregnant wife, and, you know, I needed a job. I thought, well, you know, it seemed like these people were happy that this was the last car, you know, coming out of this factory. And, you know, I knew that, you know, I knew that I was losing my job. I didn't have another job to go to. I didn't have enough seniority to put in to go to any other, you know, any other plant. And I don't know. It was just weird to me that it seemed like people were so happy, you know, and celebrating that the last car was rolling off the end of the line.
Do you know, Don, what happened to that? Do you know what happened to that last Camaro? Does anybody know where?
Yeah, actually, one of the people that we had an opportunity to work with who wrote a fantastic book, a historical accounting of, you know, the plant from the beginning to the end, by the name of Phil Boris, he actually found the car. He is a, you know, just a tenacious historian. He tracked down everything he could find on this plant, and he actually found that car. And he found the car in one place and the engine in another place, and he put them both together, and he's actually currently underway on a restoration of that last car as well.
We got an email from Bennett, and he wanted to know where exactly was the plant located and what's on that site now?
So the plant was between the Norwood Lateral, basically where Forest Avenue cuts up right there where Siemens is now, and Smith Road. There's kind of a triangulated footprint there. And it was a very, very small urban plant. So that is why it was a three-story plant. As automotive production, the techniques and just the amount of space needed increased since 1923 when it originally opened. They just had to basically build other stories on top. And what's there now is actually a mixture of retail and business. And we're actually working with the people that actually maintain the property now to host a pretty special event coming up in August.
And we'll talk about that in just a moment. I wanted to ask Pat, though, how's Norwood doing in these 30 years since the plant closed? How is it recovering from this?
Well, I think it was a surprise for Norwood, you know, that when they made this announcement, and, you know, Norwood's had some financial difficulties. You know, it's pretty well documented. But they've also, let's say, they've had a little bit of a resurgence. I mean, there's this little thing called Rookwood that's come up. You know, that's, people are like, oh, that's Hyde Park. No, that's Norwood. Every square inch of that is in the city of Norwood. And you talk about some of the urban revitalization efforts. You know, the question that just came up, what's there? There is a lot of retail that's there. But it's also, you know, people don't understand the Norwood Lateral was actually created for the GM plant. Yeah, so they could get the supply trucks and the trains right there.
Yeah, there's actually, I remember, you came up this one exit ramp, and you were looking right at the plant.
Oh, you stared right
at
it.
Yeah, you stared right at it, yeah.
You know, and you look at that and you say, wow. And you look at it and say, you know, the Norwood Lateral, as Rookwood has revitalized 71 corridor, okay, the Norwood Lateral, you've got Paycor has gone out there, and they've got 1,000-plus jobs sitting there, and the urology group is out there. And I'll put a little shameless plug for the incubator. We got an incubator client called, you know, Edigen Technologies is out there, you know, because, you know, there were some things that happened. And I think one of the things that we want to get across is that, you know, we lose 4,000 jobs. That's a big thing. Are we going to replace that right away? No. You know, are we going to go attract and bring in somebody else? That didn't happen. You know, so it really kind of started the revitalization of this thing called entrepreneurship in the greater Cincinnati area. And that was something that we brought along with our incubator on Mentor Avenue. It was actually started because of the GM plant going down. You know, we were like, we need to utilize another tool. And at that point in time in the late 80s, there was probably 50 incubators in the United States. Well, we quickly joined that group, and we're one of the longest term incubators in the United States now. So lots of success. But that's what's happening in Norwood, is you're starting to see, hey, something went down, but now you got land. okay, now we can start to build some other things that are going on. You know, because not only did the GM plant struggle, you know, and ultimately go away, but there were suppliers around that also went down that we needed to find people to replace that. You mentioned Siemens and things like that that came in. Those are companies that we needed to help stabilize the central core. And that's why our incubator went into the Norwood area, is to try to help that central industry area that Norwood has always been.
So, Drew, the event that you were starting to talk about, 30th anniversary of that that last car rolling off the lines, coming up August 26th, and there's a reunion that's planned on the 26th. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, we have been planning this for quite some time now, but we've kind of waited till the right time to sort of officially announce it, and we're actually announcing it right here on the air. And on August 26th, we will actually have the very first Camaro that was ever built, the very first hand-built pilot car, will be on the grounds in Norwood. And we're going to put together a reunion event and car show and just general Norwood assembly celebration. We're inviting, you know, everyone we've talked with on this documentary. So we're going to have a workforce, you know, a retiree workforce panel with a Q&A. We'll talk a little bit about the film. We'll show some of the scenes from the cut of the film. We are still working on the film, and we expect to have it finished by probably this time next year, but we'll give a little sneak peek of some of the scenes that are developing and show some of the special interviews we're gathering. And we'll have a filmmaker panel and Q&A. And it'll just be a really good time. You know, people who loved these cars, they'll get to see some pretty special cars. The serial number one Camaro is kind of the highlight, but we're going to have a number of special cars there. And people who have cars that they love, you know, whether it's a Norwood car or not, we want people to bring them and show them. Well, you know, we'll have some awards, we'll have some door prizes. It'll be a fun time.
Can I mention one other special car? The Bandit car that was used in filming of one of the Fast and Loud episodes.
We're going to have a number of special cars, and we're still confirming the details on all of the cars that we're going to have, but we just launched a page on the Norwood Legends site, so norwoodlegends.com. There's an events tab, so if you go to norwoodlegends.com and then go to the events page, we're going to have a listing of all those cars as they develop, and we expect to have, you know, probably a handful of special cars. There'll be some that have been featured on shows like Fast and Loud. There'll be some, you know, they're just notable because of their historical place in automotive history. It'll be something to really see.
Well, thanks to all of you for joining me this afternoon. Co-owner and creative director of 779 and producer of Norwood, where legends were born, Drew Money, producer Alex Money, Patrick Longo, who's director of HCDC, and Don Johnson, who installed that last part on that last car that rolled off the assembly line at the GM Norwood plant in 1987. If you'd like to see the trailer for Norwood, where legends were born, find out more information on the documentary, and for details on that August 26th gathering to commemorate the 30th anniversary, you can go to wvxu.org.